What's up, Craig?
That was quick. Didn't tell. Last time I tried this, it took 6 tries.
Well, I've been training him a little bit.
He's not used to listening to me. That's what it is. Yeah. You've been doing, you've been summoning him for 100 episodes, and now I'm doing it.
Yep. So, D&D news is kind of slow, and nothing exciting happened at all.
Hold on. We're the Grumpy Dungeon Masters. I'm Grumpy Dungeon Master Jay. You're Grumpy Dungeon Master Chris.
Topher.
Yeah, Christopher. That's it.
Yeah.
Well, thanks for joining us with this podcast. Hope you enjoyed it, since there's no D&D news.
So, are we calling this 6th edition? Are we calling it 5.5? Are we calling it 1D&D? Are we calling it D&D 1?
So there is quite the debate online that I'm seeing here and there. I am personally going with 6th edition.
Okay.
What are you on? What
I, given the amount of changes that they're doing, I am also in the camp of calling this a new edition of Dungeons and Dragons. However, the base mechanics of the game is not changing. So
it rarely ever has, though.
No, it has greatly. I mean,
from second to third, there was massive change in the mechanics. Initiative changed. There were a lot of things that changed from third to fourth. There was a lot of change. There were a lot of changes, but the mechanics did not particularly change.
Let me be clear. When I say mechanics, I mean like not just like, oh, you roll a die and you attack and all that. That's just how the game is played. When I say mechanics, I'm talking about like the base mathematical calculations on how things are balanced and built. Now, in 4th edition and 5th edition, like you can't take a monster from 4th edition and play it in 5th edition as it stands, because the 4th edition mechanics just don't work. Even though the stat block looks exactly the same, an 18 strength over there is base minimum, whereas in 5th edition, that's like the highest you get. Hit points are drastically different. Getting hit points is the same, but you have twice the hit points in 4th edition, because mechanically, the game deals out more damage.
Well, if that's the case, then we're looking at a 5.5 and not a 6.
And that's why they, as Wizards, is not looking at this as an addition change, in my opinion. And they haven't said that's the reason why. But to them, since the mechanics and the math behind the game that runs the game isn't changing to them, it's probably a 5.5 instead of a 6.
The online argument I've seen is, and it's probably correct, is that the fact that they're planning to make it backwards compatible, to quote them, with 5th edition, like 3rd and 3.5, they were the same damn thing. So,
right, and because of that, because the base math is the same, you can't pull up a kobold. A kobold's going to be a kobold. Use any kobold, and it's still going to work. Use a 4th edition kobold, and your party's going to have a bad time.
Yeah, fair enough.
So I think it's a 6th, because to me there's so much changing on the surface that even if the background mechanics of the game aren't changing, it's enough that I think that calling it a 6th edition is a nice clean distinction between the two, and then saying that adventures from 5th edition and 6th edition to work together because the mathematics are the same is fine. So to me it's 6, but we'll have to wait till the community gets done.
The one thing I have seen that everyone is behind is no one is calling it 1D&D.
Yeah, I'm not calling it 1D&D. I may call it D&D 1 if they swap it around, but that just gets confusing with first edition.
Yeah, no, it's 5.5 or 6. That is what the community's going to call it.
Yeah, so they should just, when D&D Next came out, they wanted it to become D&D Next. They wanted the next iteration of Dungeons & Dragons to be the final one, and they would just update it over years. And no one called it D&D Next. Everyone called it 5th Edition. And we're not going to call it 1D&D. It just sounds dumb. I'm sorry. Yeah,
it literally, yeah. Guys, you didn't learn last time you tried this. It's either 5.5 or 6.
Just call it 6.
Just get with it.
keep that rolling. And just say that 6 and 5, 6 and 5 are compatible. If you can roll a 5E fighter and a 6E fighter, and they're both mechanically going to function the same way in the game. Now, the spice that created them may be different.
Oh, it is. But it very much is.
And it is. But that spice doesn't change that they're compatible. Just call it 6 and just move on.
All right. So let's sort of dive into this. So everything that we talk about throughout the course of this podcast, this is all Unearthed Arcana. This is not a final version of anything. So all the information we tell you here today could just be wiped away and completely wrong when this edition actually comes out. Yeah. Just to cover ourselves on that.
So I love the fact that now that Wizards owns D&D Beyond, that they've integrated D&D Beyond into the playtest. So only people who have a subscription, and subscription is free, to D&D Beyond. It's just a very sneaky way to get everyone to subscribe to D&D Beyond, and then like, oh well, I can just buy the player's handbook. Oh, I can participate and get this free stuff. Oh, I guess I just bought all the books for no reason. Oh well. I like the fact that they're kind of tying it in together, because as someone who's D&D Beyond a lot, I'm already at home.
And
you may not like it.
For me, it serves zero purpose. I don't really care that they're tying it in. It makes no difference to me either way.
But you can't get the UA materials unless you have an account.
And that is the one thing that really upset me. The fact that I can't get access to that Unearthed Arcana, their upcoming stuff, without having an account. And let's be fair, I have an account with them. You know, I've had one for a couple of years at this point. I have never purchased anything off of there. I never will purchase anything off of there. And the fact that they forced me to either sign in through Google, Apple, or Twitch without just sign in. No, they can go fuck themselves.
Be careful, your old man is showing.
No, that's not my old man. That's my I like my privacy, goddammit.
Well, just in a kind of fake Google account, that's your sign in for sites like that.
Yeah, but then I'm still having to sign in via Google, which I do not like Google. I do not like things that track me. I don't even use Chrome browser. Like, I use Brave because it actually has privacy features.
So, yes, conspiracy theorist old man is showing.
Yeah, my Alabama is showing, okay?
I'm from Alabama.
That's the simple of that. So I'm not going to go, you know, I'm not going to keep bitching about it, but no, fuck them. All right, moving on.
Well, back in reality in 2022, in states other than Alabama, yeah, you need a DDB account. It's cool. Everything's great. Track me, old webmaster daddy.
Yeah, well, you enjoy that when they come for you. They'll never find me since they can't find me online, which is definitely not true, since I have a Facebook account that I use all the damn time.
So let me come out and ask you, Jay, is your tinfoil hat in the shape of a wizard hat?
What the fuck do you think? Of course it is. All right.
Oh my god.
So let's look at some of the actual changes.
Oh, I could do an hour on this.
We could start this other podcast of conspiracy theories.
Sorry.
All right. So they've changed a lot of the racial stuff. For one, we'll come back to this one when we actually get down to backgrounds, but they have changed stat bonuses, and they've removed them from race and thrown them onto backgrounds.
So I'm still laughing, but that change is irrelevant to me. I do not care where I get my plus one, plus two, or my plus one three times. It, I understand that removing the base, hey, you're an orc, you get plus two to strength and plus one to con because you're an orc, and that's what you get naturally from being an orc. And I know that we all are all special snowflakes, and we want to build the rare, unique character. We want to build the super smart orc that's a wizard. We want to play Dritz Duwerden. We want to play the gnome druid. And I get that. So mechanically removing the plus one, just giving everyone a base, hey, you can choose plus, plus two, plus one, or three plus ones when you make your character, that's irrelevant to me. I don't care. I like the min-max too. We all do. So when moving it from the race section to the background section is perfectly fine. They could take it from the race section and put it into where you roll your dice, you know, but I think background is a better home for it because a lot of what they want to do in 6th edition is make you think about the background to a character when you create them. And there's a lot more tied to that. So, you know, like saying, hey, you're a sailor. So, you know, getting plus two to strength and or plus two to dex and plus one to con makes a lot of sense.
I am going to state for the record that background is actually pointless.
It kind of is, yeah.
But I don't want to.
It always kind of has been.
I don't want to dive too much into it yet. I want to actually go through all the racial changes first.
Yeah. To me, a lot of the times I'm choosing race and background at the exact same time. For me, when I build a character, the background is very important. As much as it is as important as the race that I pick. Now, a lot of people just use background as an afterthought, and there's a big attempt in this edition, and we'll cover it when we get there, to make backgrounds matter. And
Personally, I want them to remove background from D&D. It serves no purpose.
It serves a lot of purpose. I wholly disagree with you there.
Let's finish going through the racial stuff, and then we'll get back. We'll get on this because I have an argument for it.
Okay.
All right. So with they made a big change to humans in this. And so the couple of things they got, they gave them what's called resourceful. You gain inspiration whenever you finish a long rest. And I will say some of the other changes they've done with 5e, inspiration is just very, very easy to get access to now. So you're just going to have advantage probably a couple times per combat at least. They've given them skillful. So you gain proficiency in one skill of your choice, and then you start, you get versatile, which means you gain the skilled feat or another first level feat of your choice. So literally humans are just goddamn skill monkeys. Because of this, you would be starting with 6 skills that you're proficient with. And they don't have anything on a rogue, so rogues might not get those skill bonuses anymore. Maybe they just give them expertise. I don't know how that's going to work. But if they didn't change how rogues work, then you're going to be starting off with 8 skills that you have proficiency in. My math is right, so.
I thought you were going to say the big change to the human was that they could be small creatures now. And I was going to laugh. And the fact that you didn't set up that joke makes me very sad.
I honestly hadn't noticed that. Yeah. Medium or small.
Or small.
All right. Whatever.
So, I mean, so getting the skilled feat or another first level feat of your choice is feats are going to matter and be a lot different in this edition. Yeah. We'll kind of cover feats when we get to that.
They're handing out a lot more feats, which I am perfectly okay with.
Yeah. But they're also changing feats to match, like, first level feats.
They've added level, and fourth level requirements, feats, yeah. Yes.
So, like, you're not going to pick up Piercer or Great Weapon Master at as a first level feat. That's going to come much later.
Yep.
So, which is fine. I like that a lot.
Yeah, that's a throwback to third edition, which I
fourth edition.
Yeah, I loved how they did it back then. It works great. Yeah. Put requirements in.
So the thing that I'm more focused on about the humans, and in fact all the races, is the fact that they are focusing on the multiverse. They are focusing on the fact that, you know, they have Forgotten Realms, they have Sigil, they have Greyhawk, they have Eberron, and the humans come from all places. And even in the beginning of the human description, they state that, you know, that the scholars dispute the origin of humanity, but one of the earliest known human gatherings is said to have occurred in Sigil, the Taurus-shaped city at the center of the multiverse, the place where the common tongue was born. And from there, humans have spread every corner of the multiverse, bringing Sigil's cosmopolitanism with them. So the focus of these races, and as they're building these out, and especially in this playtest, and I think for 6th edition as a whole, I'm just going to call it 6th edition until I'm corrected otherwise.
That's what we're calling it throughout this podcast.
Is that they're focused more on this is now a system for all of D&D. So your humans that you build for your homebrew, here's what we have. And, you know, you can change the feat to whatever you want. You could assign a different first level feat. But, like, here's the basis of the world that we're giving you and the basis of the rules that we're giving you for this multiverse of Dungeons and Dragons. So that's how I think a lot of these changes are kind of taken into effect. So
that actually falls in line with my thoughts on backgrounds being kind of useless.
Yeah. Because there is one new race that we're about to talk about
that we are about to complain about.
but also, I want to go through the race real quick. So humans, of course, and then there's Ardlings, which is a new one.
Yep.
Then Dragonborn.
Yep.
Then Dwarves.
Yep.
Then elves, gnomes, halflings, and then orcs.
And tieflings.
And so those are the nine races that they're thinking of starting out with. So they moved orcs from, they got rid of half orcs, and they just brought orcs in. And they do have this section at the very start talking about if you want to be a half orc or half gnome, whatever, you're allowed to basically be a half whatever.
Call yourself what you want. Just pick one of their stats, and that's it.
Yeah. So you just take the mishmash and pick which ones you like as you kind of like ping pong down through the racials.
I'm honestly not mad about it. Okay, take the orc stats, role play as a half orc. Nobody gives a shit.
One of the best-selling DM's Guild creations from one of the Storytime Collective releases this year, it was called An Orc and an Elf Have a Baby. I bought it. I never read it, but it went like gangbusters. It's like gold medal or something like that.
That's fantastic.
A lot of people love it. So yeah, so you could be an orc and an elf and basically just choose, like, I want to live as long as an elf, but I want to have the orc savagery feats, and, you know, that's what you are. You get to pick everything else. So they kind of basically, you can multi-class now your race.
Yep. All right, so let me read you what my notes that I actually wrote down for Ardling are.
How about you read what an Ardling is the...
Yeah, it actually reads, what the fuck is an Ardling? That's what I wrote.
So, go ahead and tell everybody what an Ardling is.
I'm going to read their words on this. Ardlings are supernatural beings who are either born on the upper planes or have one or more ancestors who originated there. Their bright souls shine with the light of immortal beings who call the upper planes home. An Ardling has a head resembling that of an animal, typically one with virtuous associations. Depending on the animal, the Ardling might also have soft fur, downy feathers, or supple bear skin. The Ardling's celestial legacy determines the animal it resembles. An Ardling gains a measure of magical power from their celestial legacy as well as the ability to manifest spectral wings. An Ardling's moral and ethical outlook is self-determined, however, not fixed by ancestry. We'll cover the other part here in a second. So literally, these are ASMR, which already exist in D&D. They just gave them animal heads for some weird fucking reason.
So I really don't have much of an opinion on the Arlings. They just sound weird. And they just, okay. They sound like they're the new counter to Tieflings.
Which already exist. It's been around since third edition.
So I was chatting with a couple of friends about this. And the only thing that anyone could come up with as an idea of why they would introduce Ardling would be as if they're removing ASMR.
Which is not going to take. I mean, so they can do it, but people like the ASMR.
They may be wanting to get rid of any kind of overarching Christian influences to the system,
which
and kind of coming more into like what
do I need to start reading? Do I need to start reading Tiefling?
That was what their guess is.
Let's see, honestly, Abyssal, Infernal.
Honestly, I think that this is just a way to basically give people who want to be animal-like creatures or an animal variant more options.
Probably. You know? Probably.
I
don't agree with this method of it.
I just run around with a human body in an animal head just seems more chaotic and shamanistic to me than
than
celestial. But that's just me. It also depends too on like what stories they have with them. How are they now introduced into this world? Because they haven't been around before.
Well, they don't actually write stories. So how the hell will we ever find out?
Listen, it's my goal to be able to write a story for wizards still.
Well, all right. Anyway, there are three celestial legacies that you could pick from. There's exalted, heavenly, and idyllic. Basically, it's lawful good, neutral good, and chaotic good as your sort of legacy. You're humanoid. You can be medium or small. You get 30 feet of movement, 200 years on average lifespan. As a bonus action, you sprout spectral wings for a moment and fly up to a number of feet equal to your speed. If you're in the air at the end of this movement, you fall. You can use this bonus action a number of times equal to your proficiency, and you regain all expended uses when you finish a long rest. Then you get Celestial Legacy, which basically gives you three spells that you can cast. If you're of the Exalted Legacy, you get Thaumaturgy, Divine Favor, and Lesser Restoration at 1st, 3rd, and 5th. Heavenly gives you Light, Cure Wounds, and Zone of Truth. And Idyllic gives you Guidance, Healing Word, and Animal Messenger. You also get Resistance to Radiant Damage. So that is the basics of them, which is very, 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 very similar to the ASMR.
I would love to be a 3-foot-tall, elephant-headed Ardling that just flies around the battlefield.
And we're moving on.
Okay.
We'll never come back to Ardling again. Dragonborns. So they did a couple of little updates for them. They fucked up their breath weapons again and made them useless. Hopefully that's just sort of a typo or something they overlooked because they had changed them fairly recently. So maybe this is just older than that. But with the current breath weapons, if you make the attack action as one of those attacks, you can breathe.
Yeah.
And they've just reverted it back to it is your whole action to use your breath weapon, which nobody ever used because it's not good.
Yep. My issue is that your dragon ancestor determines like the damage. So black is acid, but black doesn't shoot a cone of acid.
Yeah, they're typically a line, yes.
Yeah. But now all the breath weapons are 15-foot cones.
Are they?
I really don't like that.
They are. Yeah, that's not a good change either.
Maybe it's just because it's the UA, and like you said, maybe it's an older breath weapon. They just copied and pasted it in.
Yeah,
Dragonborns don't change really in any other kind of way, except they're just back to
they get
base metals and the base chromatic colors.
But they get dark vision.
They get dark vision back again?
No, they never had it. They get it finally.
I thought the Dragonborn in
maybe in fourth, but they never had it in fifth. Yeah, in fifth they never had it. So yeah.
I just, what happened to all the other dragons? Like you spent all this time and money making people get gem dragons and shit, and now you're pulling them out. Like,
well, they're having
advance a stupid story. Yeah, add the gem dragons in.
They should add them. They haven't had them before. But if you're going to put out books with them, might as well add them in.
Yeah. Overall, I find frustrating, and I'm going to bring this up when we get to dwarves. They are really muddying the waters with ancestry, lineage, and culture, and it's bugging me. And I'll cover it once we finish dwarves. So, other than that, dragonborns, they get draconic as a base language.
I mean, yeah, you would hope. All right, so dwarves, which is our next one. There's not a massive amount of changes, but there's some stuff. You get dark vision and dwarven resilience still. I don't think they had dwarven toughness. I don't really play dwarves.
No, they don't. They didn't have that.
All right. Yeah, your hit point maximum increases by one, and it increases by one again whenever you gain a level. So tough as shit. You gain forge wise. Your divine creator gave you an uncanny affinity for working with stone or metal. You gain tool proficiency with two of the following options: jewelers, tools, masons, smiths, or tinkers' tools. And you get stone cunning as a bonus. And I actually like stone cunning as a bonus action. You gain tremor sense with a range of 60 feet for 10 minutes. You must be on a stone surface or touching such a surface to use this tremor sense. The stone can be natural or worked. You can use this bonus action a number of times equal to your proficiency bonus, and you regain all expended uses when you finish a long rest.
Overall, the racials are fine. I like the changes that kind of buff them up a little bit. I don't like the fact that they took away the fact that they can... The old stone cutting was they can basically look at rocks and like understand more of the earth, okay? Mm-hmm. And like figure out like, oh, this is because, you know, this stone was cut this way with a chisel from an elf instead of a dwarf.
Sure.
I kind of really like that flavor that they added to the dwarves.
Yeah. And that's been a thing with dwarves since the first edition where they could just look and they know masonry.
Right. And they took it away because they want dwarves now to kind of exist as much like the humans exist, where it's like, oh, those humans over there in Greyhawk are this, and the humans over there in Dragonlance are this, and the humans in Icewind Dale are that, and the humans in Chult are this, and that's what they want for the dwarves. So all the dwarves are now, oh yeah, you're a mountain dwarf. You're just a dwarf, though. And you're a hill dwarf. You're just a dwarf, though. Oh, you're from the jungle? You're just a dwarf. And they kind of, like, took away all, like, the what 6th edition would call a lineage to mm-hmm. the dwarves. And I don't like that because, first off, it's confusing to me. Why would you let elves still have a lineage?
Yeah, I was going to say they expanded.
That being drow, high elf, and wood elf.
And gnomes. They have it too.
Gnomes, yeah. And then take it away from dwarf, who, you know, not only are the mountain, the hill, and the forest dwarves, okay? But there's also the Duergar.
Yep.
That's still a dwarven sub-race, essentially. They don't count, maybe because they're evil. I love them. Well, just because you have a hard-on for the drow and are pushing Dwitzdur and then the Saturday morning animated cartoon, I don't give a shit. I like the Duergar. Just because you're shoving drow down my throat, I have to love them. Or else I'm evil. I can't love my Duergar. Or Duergar are evil now and can't be good. Now we're getting back to the problem you have with the drow because they were all evil and now they're all good. So, like, leave lineage. If you want to call it lineage, just have it be lineage. And then take Dragonborn. Make the Dragonborn ancestor Dragonborn lineage. And then give us unique things for each of the blacks, blues, browns, and gems and whatnot. And then that way you can not have the problem where everything's on a 15-foot breath cone. Because that annoys the crap out of me that a black dragon is breathing acid in a 15-foot cone.
as opposed to a 30-foot line. Yep.
Right. So it's like on one hand they're trying to
cater
towards everybody and make everyone on unified basics and no one's upset. But on the other hand, they're kind of just like they're only doing it to the things that they like.
They're not doing
it universally across the board.
I've complained about this for a long time because they've been doing it with 5th edition for a very long time. And it is the idea of let's make it so that nobody's upset. And in the process of trying to do that, you end up making the most boring product in the world. Every race is going to be the same. All these classes are going to be the same. All this stuff is going to be exactly the same. And outside of like, it kills creativity. Yeah, you can't do that. They have to make these feel different. And they're not even trying anymore. At least not with this edition. Everything just sort of, with a few exceptions, just feels bland and lifeless to me.
I'm disappointed. I'm just picking like which racials do I like the best because it doesn't fucking matter.
Yeah.
What thing was wrong? So I get it from the multiverse aspect that the human in Forgotten Realms is not going to be the same as a human from Greyhawk or Dragonlance.
Yep.
So give human lineages, break it down by that. I mean, you give a source book for that reason, you know?
Yeah, but the thing is, they create the source books, and then those source books don't have any information in them.
So are these races the multiverse races, or are these races the Forgotten Realms races? Because I need to know one or the other.
Yeah, if they release if these are just sort of generic core races, and then they release a Forgotten Realms book, like I don't remember what they call it in 3rd edition, but it's just a book about Forgotten Realms. And in that book in 3rd edition, it listed like 20 different types of humans. Their stats were all the same, but some of them had different languages. They came from different parts of the world. It did the same with dwarves. And it gave culture and background and history to all these different types. But 5e, they have never done anything like that. They have never released a book. I think the closest they ever did was the Sword Coast.
Yeah.
And nothing since then.
Because at the end of the day, Baldur's Gate human versus a Waterdeep human versus a Neverwinter human, and I would even go as far to say elf and dwarf and whatever, tiefling, insert your favorite racial lineage here, are all completely different. They're similar, but they're different. So are we homogenizing these things down so that here is just the base multiverse race? And in that case, you can't include the drow because drow come from the Underdark. And if that multiverse doesn't have an Underdark, then you can't have the drow.
I mean, the drow is
very Forgotten Realms specific.
Yeah, Forgotten Realms, Greyhawk. That's pretty much it.
Yeah. So you can't just start going, oh, now they're in the multiverse. What are you doing? If you're going to do that to the dwarves, then you have to do it to the elves. You have to then do it to the dragonborn. And I guarantee you dragonborn aren't just like all over the multiverse.
Dragonborn do not exist in Dragonlance.
Right.
They're not a thing there.
And so like tieflings, I guess, are kind of in Eberron, but they're different.
Yep.
They're like,
don't exist in Dragonlance.
In Eberron, they're mutated from space or something like that. So you can't just throw this book out there and say, oh, this is for the multiverse. And then at the same time, come down and say, hey, yeah, we're going to have drow now in the multiverse. We're going to have dragonborn everywhere in the multiverse.
Yeah.
Because
I mean, you can throw it out there as sort of a core generic rules because Dungeons and Dragons has always had that, but a lot of those races that are unique weren't really in those core rules. Dark elves were not in the core rules probably until 3rd edition, and they were very sort of specifically in, they weren't actually, I don't even think they were, they might have been a playable race in the core book, but it was still very just heavily their Forgotten Realms. That's where you play these at. When the Dragonlance book was released, they even said dark elves in this do not exist. A dark elf is simply an evil elf. You know, like every setting must have that piece of information as to what races are viable.
Yeah. So the fact that they homogenize dwarves into like, oh, they're just dwarves, and their culture depends on the background that you build for them, just seems like this crock of crap. Because granted, a lot of the dwarves kind of share the same similarities. Oh, we live underground, we dig holes. But a shield dwarf is very different than a mountain dwarf. It's very different than a hill dwarf. And maybe just because the popular culture has homogenized them all, is just everyone's a Scottish dwarf.
Yeah. Yeah, they all speak with the Scottish accent for some weird ass reason.
That you feel like the wizard feels like now they can just kind of like just wave their hand on the dwarf and just say, oh, they're all the same now.
Yeah.
No, I'm calling you out on that. Either you give everyone separate individual lineages, or you don't. And right now, it'd be easier if you gave everybody a lineage. The second thing that I'm pissed off about.
Oh, there's more. All right.
Is this is more of a complaint that happened when Mordenkainen and Presents Monsters of the Multiverse came out. I hate that everyone has a speed of 30.
Yep.
I am irritated by that. I understand it from a rules clarity point that it's easier just to go, everyone moves 30. But it irritates me that small creatures now move 30, dwarves move 30, that elves move 30. They should be moving 35 or 40, whatever the fastest.
I will say, if you pick wood elf, you do move 35.
Is that what it says on the lineage?
Your speed increases to 35 feet. Yes.
Okay. Regardless, the races, lineages, they kind of need negatives. Okay.
Reach, brother.
Right now, there are no negatives for being one race or another. It's all positive. So it's really, honestly, pick your min-max best. Okay. I don't, at this point in time, I don't understand why everyone doesn't just go a half and half race, okay, and basically pick the racial bonuses that they like the best with the race that lives the longest and has the creature type that you want.
Yeah, okay? As campaigns don't last 300 years, age doesn't matter.
No, I mean, age doesn't matter a lot of times, but you know, the rules in there for you to basically, you take the two, average them together, and that's the result. So, you know, why not pick elf as that second race? Now you can live forever. You know, I can be a dwarf and have all the dwarf stuff, but I get to live super long time now because I average elf and dwarf years together. So there needs to be some negatives associated with each of these races. Whether if it's a stat adjustment, I'm fine with that. That's the way they used to do it in the past. But I understand if they don't want to be like, well, there was a lot of bad stuff when we wrote orcs the first time. We gave them a -1, and we don't feel that way anymore because we all grew up when the year 2000 happened. So okay, great. You don't give them -1 to intelligence anymore. But they still need something. Whether it's like, oh, you're an orc, you're a base race now. Okay, that's scary for someone just in the middle of Waterdeep. Give them the terrifying presence thing that, hey, you know, you're going to have problems just running around a city in civilized society. You're a drow. Guess what? Drows don't have any negatives anymore.
Used to be you couldn't play a drow out in public society without everybody wanting to kill you.
Right. And then in fifth, they basically said, oh, you're accepted, but everyone's still cautious around you. And now that we've progressed in the timeline and Illustrate has come and made drow mostly good, and drow are now kind of like worked their way into society of all Faerun. Now there are a lot of good drow and a lot of bad drow. People have taking the time to understand their differences, and drow are now accepted. Cool. But guess what? They should still have sunlight sensitivity because they're drow, but they don't anymore. So you're taking that away. And it's irritating because I remember sitting down with my wife, making one of her first characters for Dungeons and Dragons, and going through the list, and she's like, okay, so I'm sensitive in sunlight because I'm a drow. All right. That's cool. I'm going to role play it this way, and I'm going to wear these kind of like bones that I found and chiseled into kind of like sunglasses in a way, so I can see during the daytime. And I'm like, that's really cool. The sunlight sensitivity is still going to count, but you know, you basically are, you know, you're not just like, oh, the sun's burning my eyes, you know, yep, all the time.
The stats don't change, but for roleplay purposes, it's you're protecting your sight as best right as possible.
So the fact that there are no negatives in any of these races in any way, shape, or form is irritating. You can't just take the good and only good, just good all the time. There has to be some bad for it being the different races.
Yeah. There should be
some weird thing with arming, like everyone goes, ah, what the fuck, every time I talk to you.
Yeah. Yeah, no shit. After reading through this, and I've been bitching about the no negatives for quite a while now, I've seriously considered writing up or getting online and finding a page of disadvantages. And then with my campaign, I would require everybody to take one. You know, and it could be simple stuff. You know, your character stutters or I say that's not simple, but it can be minor. It could be major. You know, if you allow your players to sort of pick, they have a little bit of control over what their disadvantage is. Maybe it's if you see a giant, you immediately take, you know, a fear spell or the equivalent of a fear. Stuff like that.
It doesn't have to be weird things like that. It should be baked in to the racial.
I agree. Build out of the character. It should. At the very least, at the very goddamn least, make gnomes speed of 25 feet.
You know, that's enough. That's enough. It's like, oh, I'm a small creature. Okay. I have a speed of 25. Okay. Just something, because people are very creative. And necessity is the mother of all inventions, and that applies to role-playing games as well, too. You know, being just 5 feet away, like, oh, if I could only move 5 more feet, I could have saved that person.
Yep.
Damn my stubby legs.
Yep. There's no growth without challenges. The most interesting people in the world are the people who have difficulties or who have been through the shit and overcome it. You know, and this, what we're seeing here, is not going to breed interesting characters. It's just not.
Yeah, you're just going to pick the stat you like the best, mishmash them together, get your character. It's like, oh, I'm tired of being a human. I don't need all these fucking skills and awesome stuff, but I love how the orcs are savage, so I'm going to be a half-orc, but only look like a human, only present human, and I'm going to have all the orc adrenaline rushes and dark vision.
Yeah, all the good fighting stuff, yeah.
Yeah, that's all that's going to happen with this crap.
Oh, yeah. Yep.
And all right. It's rank done. Go to elf.
I mean, I'm on board with you. I've been bitching about it for a while, and this is just making it even more obvious. So, elven stuff. They didn't make a lot of changes. They've got the three lineages, the drow, the high elf, the wood elf. The only thing I really saw that they get differently is they get proficiency and perception skill, like all elves just get that now. And I don't think they got these spells before. But if you are a, you know, depending on your lineage, you get a spell at third and at fifth level.
They also have the new long rest too, where their long rest is just 4 hours.
That's actually been a thing for a long time.
No, the old rule, as complicated as it was, is that you finished your long rest in 4 hours, but it still took you 8 hours to go through the whole long rest process.
Oh, okay, whatever. Either way, there's no major changes to the elves. Gnomes, I didn't really compare them to the actual gnomes in 5e. I don't think there was any major changes other than the lineages. And You know, if you're a rock gnome, you get mending and prestidigitation. If you're a forest gnome, you get minor illusion cantrip, and you can speak with animals, or you get the speak with animal spells.
Which what if I'm a deep gnome?
Well, that is apparently not a thing anymore. So, halflings, I don't think there was any changes. Proficiency and stealth, maybe. But
I should always have that.
Yeah. They might have. Let's see. Orcs.
Well, orcs are new, essentially, because it's
yeah.
What we half orcs are gone. Orcs are in, but they're pretty much just this. They're the straight orcs, straight from the Fae Run as they are, the ones that basically come from Grummish, and they're not evil. They're just.
If you're a follower of Grumsh, you're evil.
That's how they trace their lineage back. But they just want to basically go out and dare do heroic deeds. So you get to pick, but you're a good orc. You just want to fight things, I guess.
Yeah, they've still designed them, despite getting rid of the stat bonuses, they still designed them to be just big, dumb, hulking tanks. You get adrenaline rush. You can take the dash action as a bonus action. When you do so, you gain a number of temporary hit points equal to your proficiency bonus. You can use that a number of times equal to your prof. You get dark vision 60 feet. You get powerful build, which means you count as one size larger when carrying or pushing, dragging, etc. And you still have relentless endurance. If you're reduced to zero but not killed outright, you drop to one instead. So they didn't really make any changes there.
So again, if you want to be a human fighter,
yeah, you take orc stats and say, I'm half orc, half human.
You don't even say that you're half human. You just say, hey, I'm human, because you present human, and you have human everything. And then you just have all the cool orc special traits.
Yep. It's stupid.
It's just annoying.
And then there's Tiefling, of which they have split it into three lineages as well. You have Abyssal, Chthonic, and Infernal. So basically, lawful evil, neutral evil, chaotic evil lineages.
Yeah, that's why the Ardling is kind of like the opposite of the Tiefling. That's what the Asimar kind of were.
It's an Asimar.
Guess they want to remove the angelic representation that they had, or something. I don't know.
Yeah. Now, the legacies for this are a little different. Abyssal, you get resistance to poison damage. You know the poison spray cantrip. Chthonic, you have resistance to necrotic, and you know chill touch. Infernal is what you already have. Resistance to fire and fire. Actually, you get firebolt cantrip. And then at third and fifth level, you get different spells. Abyssal gets Ray of Sickness, Hold Person. Chthonic gets False Life, Ray of Enfeeblement. And Infernal, same as always, Hellish Rebuke and Darkness.
So overall, the races are fine. I mean, they're all your basic fantasy races in the D&D spectrum. You know, they're not the Lord of the Ring races, as some people keep wanting them to be. But they're very much the Fae Run base races with a bit of multiverse thrown in there. Every single racial block has this X race of many worlds, and like how they exist in the greater multiverse and how they stand there, because they mentioned Greyhawk and Dragonlance a lot. So it's just, they kind of need to come out and just like say, hey, this is either the multiverse races and the general races of what they would be for in any multiverse, and then explain how Tieflings exist in Eberron and other places. Because if they start homogenizing all the other worlds to be like Fae Run, that's just going to be the worst thing ever.
Oh, absolutely. I'm just hoping that going forward, they actually release lore books on these actual settings that matter. Sam.
So the next section, moving after races, is the character backgrounds. And the character backgrounds
Let me read some of this real quick. And then I can explain why I say this is entirely pointless having backgrounds. So the very first thing it says under building your background is, using the rules here, you can build a background from scratch or customize a pre-made background focusing on details related to the backstory you have in mind for your character. It's that very first part. You can build a background from scratch. And they basically tell you how to do it. Ability scores, when you determine your character's ability scores, choose two of them and increase one by two and the other by one. Alternatively, choose three ability scores and increase each of them by one. Skill proficiencies, choose two skill proficiencies. Tool proficiencies, choose one tool. Language, choose one language. So why have Acolyte, why have Artisan, why have Charlatan? Why don't they just say, here you go. You get three stat points. You get two skills. You get a tool. You get a language. You start with one feat, because it does say choose one first level feat and equipment. You get 50 gold. There's no point in actually having any of these listed out if you can just build what the hell you want.
So the reason, if you had actually watched the video I linked you, they talked about how they want backgrounds to basically be as important, more important than choosing the race for a character. You know, when you create a character and you sit down and create a character, they want you to basically kind of ask yourself a couple of questions. Who are the character's ancestors? How did the character spend the years leading up to a life of? How did the character spend the years leading up to a life of adventure? And then from those two questions, pick your race, our background, and a language. So they, and just like they let you kind of like choose the half-breed option for the race, you're allowed to basically choose your own background that fits the character that you were trying to build. So from the standpoint of you get to choose plus one, plus two, where your stats go, you get to choose your tools, you get to choose your proficiency and your language. Yes, if you want to get that customized with your character and you're min-maxing that hard, and you're
that's not even min-maxing.
Your human fighter with the orcs racials and you're coming down here to tool efficiencies, you can pick the tools that match and you can make the background story that adds to your background story. But if you're just trying to make a character and you want to just pick up something quick, they have provided a number of sample backgrounds for you to choose from. So half to your point, everyone builds your own background now.
Yeah.
But if you don't care about the specifics or don't have the time or just don't care, you can choose a sample background. So when you're building your human with orc racials, you can just choose Gladiator and be done with it.
Okay? Dungeons and Dragons has always been a game about rules and regulations when it came to character creation.
Yes.
And this is just sort of, this is very generic. Have you ever heard of GURPS?
Yes.
Yeah. It stands for Generic Universal Role-Playing System. It's put out by Steve Jackson Games. This is GURPS. This is literally GURPS. It's here. You just pick what you want. Here's how many of each thing that you can get. Here's your points that you get to put into these things. Build your character however you want. And that is not what D&D is. That is not what D&D has ever been. D&D has always been you pick your class, you pick your race. These are the bonuses you get for that combination. They're going off on some weird other version of it that I'm not a fan of.
I think a lot of that falls down to the fact that this is based around a multiverse setting. So saying that, hey, here are the backgrounds for a human in the Faerun is not going to be the same as a background for a human in Dragonlance. So, like, as a DM, I can sit there and go, hey, I know you can make a custom background. I'm going to let you choose where you want to put your ability scores. But you have to choose one of these backgrounds that I'm giving you. gladiator, guide, sailor, what have you. And you, that's what you get.
Like with 5e, I was forced to pick one of these backgrounds for good or for worse. And I would actually have a difficult time a lot of the times because the class that I was picking might already have a skill that background was getting. So I would then have to decide, okay, how am I going to navigate so I get the maximum number of skills that actually fit the character? Now I just can, you know, place them however I want. It takes any thought or any creativity out of it.
I think a lot of creativity again comes from necessity, and giving people a box to play from and then play out of is a good way to approach a character build. Here are my pros, here are my cons, here's my motivation, and this is how I'm going to move forward. So just giving me a box full of pros and then saying, oh, your motivation is whatever you want it to be, and letting me choose, I guess. Like, I was a sailor. Okay, cool. But there's nothing that really sailor gives me that I can't just choose the background feat from and choose whatever. I think making a lot of backgrounds and making them important and say you have to choose one of these is definitely the way to go.
Yes.
Because backgrounds are super important. Just going with this, saying, hey, you can make a custom background and that's the primary option, that's wrong. But saying that it's a secondary option if none of these fit is okay.
Let
everyone else choose a background that suits them.
I would absolutely put a caveat. I would say building your background, it would say with DM permission. And I know in general that's always going to be the case anyway, but with all, you know, you get new dungeon masters out there and new players and everything, and without having that one little phrase there, all players are going to just think they can just do this. And if you say, if you can build your background, if your DM says so, then that works.
Yeah, having it be the primary option is build your own is the wrong direction, in my opinion.
Yes.
But then again, like, if I was playing a gladiator, you know, I wouldn't pick +2 to strength, +1 to charisma. I would never choose charisma as a stat for a fighter. I would always choose con or dex. But, you know, if you said, hey, you have to choose one of these backgrounds and you have to choose gladiator, and it's going into charisma.
Yeah. If you wanted to play a gladiator, well,
make it work.
You get a point of charisma.
Because you go back up there and look at guard, or down there and look at guard. I know guard is somewhere. Guard gets +2 to strength, +1 to wisdom.
Yep.
And dwarves for some reason is a language, because I guess all dwarves are guards.
Yeah, wisdom is generally going to be a better choice than charisma, even though it's not. Obviously, you would like +2 strength and +1 con as a fighter type, but that you know, wisdom is going to be more saving throws than charisma is, so it's a little better.
So we don't really have to go through backgrounds.
I'm not going through any of them because they're all the
same. One thing they did change is it looks like they're getting starting equipment, and all the starting equipment equals 50 gold, but it doesn't include like weapons and armor. So I think weapons and armor are assigned to you when you pick your class, and that's not a part of this UA at this time.
Yeah. That's the thing where, like, when it comes to starting equipment, I've always done it the same way. You start with whatever your maximum class starting money is, and then you buy equipment. Unless I'm running a one shot or something, I just, you know, let them pick. But if it's brand new campaign, here's, you know, you got some money, spend it, get your stuff out of that.
On to starting languages, which is actually a good change.
How so?
They brought back rare languages.
Did they? I never even bothered looking at the languages section.
So right now, when someone creates,
they did. Okay.
A character in 5th edition, all the languages are just in one massive table, and every single time, someone comes up and goes, "I'm going to make a rogue. I'm going to be a drow. Can I choose deep speech as my language or secondary?" And I look at them and go, Why? So I can know what the beholder's saying. What beholder? You're level one.
Yeah.
We're in Avernus. We're playing in hell. Why are you choosing deep speech? It's a telepathic language to begin with. You're not even telepathic. So I love that they brought back rare languages. So a lot of the stuff when people are choosing races, they were assigned their language. Orc speaks Orc.
Yep.
The Ardling, whatever the hell those are, speaks Celestial, you know, and the Tieflings, depending on their lineage, got Infernal or Abyssal. And essentially you can go through and you get a standard language. And then depending on your, you know, background and or your initial race, you could get a rare language. I think some of the feats give you a rare language as well. I believe there was a criminal background that they gave as a sample.
Now, just looking at the sailor, you speak Primordial, which is a rare language. I don't know why. But you do.
Hey, fish! Boop, 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 boop.
Yeah,
I'm speaking little, Primordial to the fish. Boop, boop, boop.
A little weird, but all right.
Criminal gets Thieves Cant.
They better. Honestly, well, just being a rogue, you should get Thieves Cant. Don't even need to be criminal.
Well, I don't think they're going to add, they're going to have you be, choose languages based on your class.
No, they should just get it. It should be a thing that they get.
So, they have standard languages and rare languages. I like that.
Yeah, and they didn't really change anything. They've just separated them into two groups.
Honestly, they need to take this a step further and have standard, rare, and exotic. And move deep speech out of rare languages into its own category as exotic. You know, same thing for rogue, for Thieves Cant. Because that's an exotic language. Only rogues
and druidic.
Yeah. And same thing with druidic. Yeah, like all those should really be a little bit more rare. Like I shouldn't be able to get something from a rare language table and pick Thieves Cant.
Yeah, you have to actually be hanging out with the druids to speak druidic.
You just got to eat this mushroom, man.
Yeah. All right, let's get on with the feats here.
So one thing we didn't cover when we went to backgrounds is the fact that every background chose a feat of first level.
Yes,
the stable backgrounds. But when we talked about the building our own separate one, you get to choose a feat.
Yep.
So, we kind of hinted at this earlier. Feats now are divided up by levels, and some feats basically lead into other feats. So all that's shown right now are the first level feats.
Yeah. And only a handful of them. We're not going to go over all of them, but some of them, they actually made changes to. So we do want to kind of cover those.
Yeah. So like a lot of them is like alert, for example.
Yeah.
That's a very, very powerful feat in fifth edition. And usually just the one guy that always has like the high perception just takes alert and it's even more alert. And so what they did for that is to kind of like make it a little bit less required is anyone who takes the first level feat of alert gets when you roll initiative, you get to add your proficiency bonus to the roll, which is nice. That's not based on any stat like dex or anything like that.
Yeah, it's not just a straight up +5 anymore. It's your proficiency bonus.
Yeah, which is a lot better than just a straight number.
Yep.
But also they get now initiative swap, where once they roll initiative, they can swap their initiative with somebody else as long as they're not incapacitated.
Somebody who's willing. Somebody, an ally. Yeah.
Yeah. An ally, probably.
No, it says so. You can swap your initiative with a willing ally. But the nice thing is they get rid of the other creatures don't gain advantage on attack rolls against you as a being unseen by you. And you can't be surprised while you are conscious, because fuck you. I've always hated that. The fact that you can't be surprised when you're conscious.
Now, there could be an alert that's like a second level feat.
I'd be fine with a higher level one if you're fourth level or seventh level or whatever, and take another.
When you get to fourth level, you can choose a second level feat, And if there's a second level alert and it requires you to have the first level alert, then you can build into that. And those other bonuses are much better. Like I said, Piercer and Great Weapon Master, all the cool feats that are in here that are extra damage, come much later. Also, no feats have pluses to ability scores anymore.
Yeah. Yep. Not that I've seen, and I doubt they're going to add that since they seem to be wanting to move away from that in the first place.
I think at a high level, maybe the feats will, but not at first level. Yep. Which is something that I have always do. That's like the trick that I do, and I think a lot of other people do, is like they get that one score when they're building your fifth level character to 17, and they pick the feat that gives them plus one to that 17 so they can make it
18. Yeah. Everybody does that.
They changed medic for the better.
Well, hang on. Let's not miss. They got crafter. So I know there's not much to talk about this, but the discount. I do not like the fact that this just gives a, whenever you buy a non-magical item, you just receive a 20% discount on it. Like, what the hell is that?
They're adept with bargaining with merchants.
Make them use fucking persuasion like everybody else, or deception like everybody else. I'm not a fan of that feat having that. I don't mind the faster crafting and the tool proficiencies thing. Those are good alone. But the discount is bullshit.
Yeah, because everyone uses crafting.
Yeah, I know, right? I try to build campaigns for people to do it, and it never works out, unfortunately.
Listen, I'm going to take a 20% discount and buy a goddamn galleon and then respec myself.
There you go. So healer, you were saying they did sort of make it better. I'll let you cover it.
They said in the video that you didn't watch, they talked about how they had the healer feat in there, and they intended people who are not healing classes to choose that feat so they could all help with the healing on the battlefield. And what happened was no one except for the healers chose healer as a feat.
Yeah.
So they made it so that you basically have training in administering first aid to others, they should also change it from healer to first aid. And you get battle medic, which basically is the same as it kind of is now, where you, if you have a healer's kit, you can use your action and heal the person there. You basically trigger one of their hit die, and they get that hit die plus a number of points equal to your proficiency bonus. So you don't have to be the healer. You can heal somebody for your proficiency plus a D8 or D10, essentially, which is cool. I like that they're focusing more on proficiency than stats. See,
that's actually useful, because what healer's kit did previously with it was an action, and you expend a use of it to stabilize somebody that's at zero hit points.
Yeah.
I mean, you could already do that with a medicine check if you succeed on it. But this is actually, you actually can heal somebody something with that.
Yeah. And then healing rerolls, when you roll a die, determine the number of hit points to restore the spell, or with the battle medic feat or battle medic benefit that we just talked about, you can reroll the die if it rolls a one. So they made heal. Like, if I'm a soldier, I'm probably picking up healer, because healers have,
No, you're not. You're picking up all sorts of other shit that's going to help you do damage.
No, not if I'm a soldier.
But a bard might pick this up, or maybe even a wizard or something. But probably not.
No.
I don't think anyone's picking it up, but it is much better than it was.
I'm picking Savage Attacker.
Yeah, you are. So, Lucky. They fixed Lucky.
No, they didn't.
Yeah, they did.
No, they didn't.
They made it so much less powerful.
You still basically give advantage to whenever you want advantage, and you can give people disadvantage whenever you want disadvantage.
But you know what it doesn't do? It does not save your ass on saving throws.
Not yet.
I mean, assuming they don't change what's here. So Lucky now reads luck points. You have a number of luck points equal to your proficiency bonus. You can spend the points on the benefits below, and you regain your expended luck points when you finish a long rest. So in the beginning, this is going to be less than it actually gives you already in 5e, but at the higher end, it's going to be more luck points. You can use it on advantage. Immediately after you roll a 20 for a D20 test, you can spend one luck point to give yourself advantage on the roll, which is not what it does currently. And disadvantage. When a creature rolls a D20 for an attack roll against you, you can spend a luck point to impose disadvantage on that roll. So what it does, normally you have three luck points. Whenever you make an attack roll, an ability check, or a saving throw, you can spend one luck point to roll an additional D20. So that actually allows you to possibly roll three dice. You can choose you can choose to spend one of your luck points after you roll the die, but before the outcome is determined, you choose which of the D20s is used for the attack roll, ability check, or saving throw. You can also spend one luck point when an attack roll is made against you. Roll a D20, then choose whether the attack uses the attacker's roll or yours. If more than one creature spends a luck to influence, blah, blah, blah. But anyway, this is much more in line than what previously was.
But I like the fact that I can just close my eyes and stab into the dark and
roll three dice.
And roll three dice and choose the one I want.
Yeah, which is...
How do you think Sam killed Sheila?
Yeah, the whole thing is stupid. I like this much better. It's still powerful, it's still really good, but it is not ridiculous.
Yeah, but they're all first level feats, and they could be very different by the time... second level and third level feat kind of get factored in.
I don't care, because at that point you're required to take a lesser feat. Like it's building a character over time.
Yeah. So that's a big takeaway. Feats are now leveled up, and different feats do different things, but they're still great cornerstone pieces of your character.
And the only other one that I wanted, the only other feat I wanted to cover myself was musician. And it's not super powerful or anything, but I'm just glad they added it. So, instrument training, you gain tool proficiency with three musical instruments of your choice and inspiring song. As you finish a short rest or a long rest, you can play a song on a musical instrument with which you have tool proficiency and give inspiration to allies who hear the song. The number of allies you can affect in this way equals your proficiency bonus. So, it's
Where is the cool musician fee?
Maybe the leveled up one. I don't know.
No, there needs to be one in here where it says you have inspiring song and you need to have like taunting ballad or something. And basically you stand on top of a trailer home and play Metallica and it's summon all the bad guys to you. Yeah. That needs to be in there as a part of the feat.
Well, honestly, I think that's just a thing you can normally do. So if you just take musician and then you go into literal hell and stand, you know, within a few
infernal war machine
on an infernal war machine within a few hundred yards of all the bad guys who want to eat you. Yeah, all these, you know, all the flying demons and devils that want to murder you anyway, and just start playing Master of Puppets on your lute. And I'm willing to bet you they're going to show up. So yeah, that's sort of my takeaway on feats. Were there any other ones you wanted to look at?
Honestly, no, because I really just to go over them all individually is kind of they're making changes for the better. They're not as powerful as the feats are in 5th edition because they want you to level into other ones, and that's really the takeaway for it. Mm-hmm. You know, if you're really interested in knowing what each of the feats are, look it up, give feedback to Wizards when they ask for it, and, you know, we can help build a better game. Woo!
I mean, there's only a handful of other feats that we're not covering, and honestly, they didn't really change much. Certainly not enough to waste our time on. Let's see. What other things do we have? D20 test.
Oh, hold on. So just keeping going through. Arcane spells. We'll cover this in a little bit, but they have a section for arcane spells, and spells are now divided up into three separate schools, and we'll cover that in a second. They talk about artisan tools. If you have tool proficiency in a tool, you get basically add your bonus, the tool proficiency bonus, your proficiency as a bonus when using the tools in an attempt to get extra points. So like if you're trying to pick a lock and you're using thieves tools, you get to add your proficiency bonus to your check, whatever that may be.
Yeah.
It's basically they're basically taking the variant rule from Xanathar's and making that the base rule. Also, all tools now cost 15 gold.
Okay.
Instead of 50.
That's more reasonable.
Yeah.
I mean, if you're start, you know, they start you with 50 from your background.
They talk about creature types. That those really aren't changing. And then they talk about D20 test. And this is the D20 test is them coming up with a new term for you for when you roll a D20 to do something. So whenever you make an ability check or an attack roll or a saving throw, you're doing what they now call a D20 test. So the DM determines whether a D20 test is warranted in any given circumstance. To be warranted, a D20 test must have a target number no less than 5 and no greater than 30. Which
is stupid.
I don't like that range. I understand that range. But I guess for newer DMs, it makes a lot of sense to give them a range. For an advanced DM, who cares if it's less than 5? If it's 5, they're pretty much going to win.
If I think their DC is less than 10, I don't even have them roll.
Right. Because the take 10 rule, while it's still not an official rule in D&D, is always played for effect. Passive checks still are a thing, from what I understand. But, however, so a D20 test is the target number is no less than 5 and no greater than 30. Rolling a 1. If you roll a 1 on a D20, the D20 test automatically fails regardless of any modifiers to the roll. So they are changing the ability check rule where a 1 isn't a failure in the ability check because you still add your proficiency and you may still pass, you know. Now a 1 on an ability check is an automatic failure.
Which is exactly how I've always run it.
That is not how I run it. I run it per the book, which is like you still add your ability score. And earlier levels, it doesn't matter much. When you start getting around like 8 and 9, you know, a 10 is easy to beat if you roll a 1.
I play with guys, you know, most of them have been playing for a long time. You know, we're like 3rd edition and earlier. It's just you roll a 1, you failed.
Yeah. So now if you roll a 20, on the D20, the D20 test automatically succeeds regardless of any modifiers to the roll. A player also gains inspiration when rolling the 20 thanks to the remarkable success. Rolling a 20 does not bypass limitations on the test, such as range and line of sight. The 20 bypasses only bonuses and penalties to the roll.
So now, which is already how I already play it.
So I want to seduce the dragon. I rolled a 20. I get to seduce the dragon. No, you don't.
No.
You don't get to seduce the dragon just because you rolled a 20. And the dragon's not going to sleep with you. You horny, horny bard, go to horny jail.
Yep.
Now, they need to make that very clear that you can't just roll a persuasion check, get a 20, and have the king take his crown off and give you the kingdom. He's not going to do that. Okay? They need to really define that the automatic success, that they say it there where it only bypasses bonuses and penalties, but it doesn't bypass limitations.
I think that's a thing in the DM's guide. I don't know for certain, but I think it's in 5e. It was absolutely in earlier editions. Everything when it comes to charisma checks basically has limitations. Most people that you run into are straight up neutral. And if you get into a conversation with them of some sort and you roll like a nat 20 on that, that still isn't going to change their liking of you by a massive amount. Right. You know, it might put you on their slightly better side, but it's not going to make them just automatically go sleep with you, give you all their money. It's never been a thing.
But it is a thing to a lot of tables out there who
because
have
they don't know better. Yes.
Who don't know better. So they need to be very specific. It doesn't bypass limitations, range, line of sight, character composure, and be more specific about when the 20 success isn't a success. Yes, you rolled a 20 to talk to King and to give you his kingdom. The 20 success means he doesn't execute you right there in the spot.
Yeah, yeah, exactly. As another example, you're trying to climb a wall that's, you know, completely flat surface covered in grease. I don't give a shit if you roll an at 20. That is not climbable. You know, there are certain things that are not doable, period.
Right. So they need to really redefine what they shouldn't say automatic succeeds. It should say maybe the test succeeds as long as there are no limitations on the success. Or something along those lines. To say,
yeah, so long as it is actually feasible.
Yeah. So, like, I'm fine with, like, a feat of strength, you know. I roll a 20, and I'm trying to throw a rock. I'm going to give a good example. So I want to throw a rock, okay?
Yep.
And I need to throw the rock 100 feet, okay? However, if that's possible, this rock, I can throw it that far. I have, like, a 20 to strength, and I'm a gift, so I'm bigger. All right. So I want to throw the rock, and I roll a 20. And I add my strength to it, and consider a large creature. So I chuck the crap out of that rock.
Mm-hmm.
And granted, let's just say it's only going to go my strength modifier times four.
We're going to ignore the actual distance that you would be allowed to throw a rock anyway, which is probably 120 feet. But.
So, yeah. So or now 60, I'm just throwing it. I roll a 20. I hit it directly on the mark. That's the success that it is. You know, if I roll a one, I should still be able to add in my strength and should go far, you know.
Mm-hmm.
I don't like this automatic failure, automatic success, hard tied in thing. I like the way it is where, yeah, add your bonuses in and you may still fail, but maybe just not as spectacularly if you didn't have anything to plus.
Yeah. You know? I am absolutely a fan of auto success and auto failures. I've always played it that way. But at the same time, it's like we've already explained. There are times it is not possible. So
rolling a 20 on an attack and getting a free crit, they are changing the crit rules. They only provided some of the changes in here, but essentially it's this. Weapons and unarmed strikes have a special feature for player characters, critical hits. If a player character rolls a 20 for an attack roll with a weapon or unarmed strike, the attack is also a critical hit, which means it deals extra damage to the target. You roll the damage dice of the weapon or unarmed strike a second time and add the second roll as extra damage to the target. For example, a mace is 1d6 plus strength. It's now 2d6 plus strength on a crit. If your weapon or unarmed strike has no damage dice, it deals no extra damage on the critical hit. They are now limiting critical hits to weapon and unarmed strike attacks by the player only.
Yep.
Spells, no longer critical hit if it's an attack roll spell. And monsters, via the DM, no longer critical hit at all. Now, that's not stated here, but in the video where they talk about the UA rules, Jared Crawford brought that up. DMs don't crit with monsters anymore.
Yeah, it's also the way this reads. I don't think this doubles smite damage. I don't think this doubles sneak attack damage.
It does not. It only doubles weapons.
Because it says it very specifically, you roll the damage dice of the weapon or unarmed attack a second time. It doesn't say you roll all of your dice, you know, or you double the amount.
You want to know why it's no longer that way? Because sure. They said that they got feedback that it was too confusing when they hit a crit and had sneak attack to roll all the dice twice.
How the fuck is that confusing? How? Did these people not go to school? Did you not have a fucking math class in ninth grade? Oh my god.
It's not really a math class, man. It's just like basic comprehension of roll your dice twice. And I will say this, the amount of times that comes up as a problem when playing Avengers League is a lot. Like, I have people who are seasoned players and like, oh, I rolled a crit. Cool. And they'll double their weapon, but they won't damage the smite. Or they newer players don't get like, roll all the damage for this attack twice. Oh, so I got to add it up twice? Don't do the attack twice. Just roll the dice twice and add them all together.
This leads to another problem within D&D if you do this, because then they have to alter the stats of every monster. Because crits, while not every combat is going to have a crit, the amount of hit points that monsters have is still based upon the ability to do that level of critical damage.
Right. So monsters not critting, the logic behind that is they want to start working in recharges and critical hit effects for monsters. So for an example, the problem they're running into is, let's say a snake bites you. A snake deals 1d4 piercing damage and 1d6 poison damage. On a critical hit, only the 1d4 is rolled twice, not the poison, because the poison is a carry-on damage, not part of the attack. Okay? Now, a lot of DMs just roll the d4 and a d6 twice. And that's not technically correct, because there's a period in that statement. I think it also says it also deals this. And because it says it also deals this, it's not a part of the attack. It's a carry-on damage, so it's not applied to the part of the attack for the crit. So I can understand how that is confusing for the monsters, for the DM, but it's not that confusing once you get used to it.
I mean, I've always rolled that extra damage as well.
I know you did. I know you have.
And guess what? My players are fine with it.
They also said that it was they got a lot of feedback, and players didn't like the fact that the bugbear during the surprise round could crit them and kill them in one hit.
Yeah, bugbear will fuck level you one. Up.
So, like, in that case, you know, the 48 sucks, but you're level one, you're dead.
Yeah. Sucks to be you, you know?
And, like, you can't coddle players like that.
No.
I have killed... There was a girl I was trying to date. And we're playing D&D together.
And you killed her.
And I killed her with a crit in the first round of her first game ever. I'm not holding back. I don't care who you are. I'm not trying to impress you. I'm trying to DM.
Yeah, exactly. Like,
I get it. I it does suck. But that's just part of the game.
With this part, even getting your ass kicked by a bugbear. Okay, your first level bugbear comes in there. Oh, 4d8 damage. Shit, you're dead on the ground. Guess what? You have 3 rounds for one person to heal you one fucking hit.
No, you're dead. 48, you're dead.
No, you're probably taking half of 4d8 plus their strength bonus. You're going to take a total of maybe 18 damage on average.
At level 1? That kills most players.
No, it does not kill most players.
Yes, it does.
No. If you're a fighter, or say you're a rogue, so you have a d8 of hit points, then you have a plus 2 con modifier, then another d8 of hit points, I might kill you. But if you're a fighter, you're probably going to survive that.
Let's see. Fighter's a d10 plus con, so it's 13. So he'd be bleeding out.
Yeah.
So the average of a 48 plus 3, I think, is with the bugbear?
Probably.
So
19 maybe would be average. It's going to be, 21 actually would be the average.
22. Either way. Yeah, 21. So 21 is the average. Okay. Yeah, so the warrior's bleeding out, the barbarian's bleeding out, the rogue is dead, the wizard's dead, the bard is dead.
Well,
the sorcerer is dead.
It sucks to be
dead. The druid is dead, the artificer is dead.
How many people actually use massive rules in the game?
That's not massive. That's a base rule. If you take your hit points,
I know what the base rule is. Damage, it's called, that's actually called the. I think it No, massive was if you took 50 or more in one round.
Yes.
I don't know what it's called. But anyway, not most people don't even use that rule.
I use that rule all the time because I kill many a player.
Yeah, you kill everybody. You like killing player, yeah, fucking characters. That's your favorite thing to do. most DMs do not actually use that rule, as far as I'm aware. So,
no. Well, they've had enough complaints about it. So, if your problem is that critical hits are killing players at level
take
one,
that take that rule out. Problem
then
solved.
Take that, change that rule then. So, it doesn't matter how big the hard to hit is in this foo-foo kitty glove version of the game. You don't die outright. You're just bleeding out. Maybe take an extra death, take a death failure on top of it or something. I don't know.
That's hardcore, we're motherfuckers. Going. We're going back to second edition.
I honestly think that's what they should do. They should have like a beginner variant rules and then like the advanced player rules.
You mean like basic Dungeons and Dragons and then advanced Dungeons and Dragons?
If only they had like a namesake like that. Yeah, just like that. That would be perfect. They could bring that to 6th edition.
I mean, geez, it would be awesome if anybody had ever done something like that before.
A basic 6th edition and then like an advanced 6th edition. Huh.
And then you get to make more money because you're selling it to two different crowds. And then when they get bored with the basic one, they have to spend more money to get the advanced version.
And then you could write modules just for the advanced versions, forcing them to get the advanced version.
Well, you could write it for both of them.
No, just the advanced version.
Just saying, you could write it for both of them. You know, as if somebody had ever done that before.
And then what you do is you write just the basic modules and then sell the advanced rules on DM's Guild. Or D&D Beyond.
All right, Watsy, you need to be listening to this. We're making you money. Listen up. All right, let's get the last few things out of the way.
So, divine spells, again, we're kind of touching on it a little bit. Grappled is a condition now where your speed is now zero. You have disadvantage on attack rolls against any other target other than the person that you're that's grappling you. You can be moved while you're grappled. And then escape is now a dex or strength against a grappled DC. Instead of a contested roll against another at the athletics check or the athletics roll, sorry, the strength roll from the person that's grappling you.
I hate this so much.
I don't like that. I like the contested. I like people rolling dice.
There are two things I hate about this. One is that I hate the fact that they're getting rid of the contested roll. I've always enjoyed that. It's entertaining to me. It's interesting. And because sometimes you can just get lucky and escape because they rolled shit. Whereas in this case, there's no luck involved other than your dice roll. They have no say in what's going to happen. The other thing that I really hate about this is that it is no longer an action to escape grappling.
Yeah, because at the end of your turn.
Because grappling generally sucked anyway. But at the same time, it was still somewhat useful because if you wanted to get out of it, you had to expend your action to do so. Now, you just get a save at the end of each of your turns.
Yeah.
Not good.
Yeah, not the best change. I kind of agree. Incapacitated, you're now inactive, which is you can't take actions or reactions. Your concentration is broken. You can't speak. And if you're incapacitated when you roll initiative, you have a disadvantage on the initiative roll.
Yeah. Those are all right changes. Like, I don't think the concentration thing was part of it previously, and the having disadvantage on initiative roll.
Yeah.
Those are the new parts to that. I didn't look up every single one of these. So.
The last condition they added was slow. They brought slowed back from 4th edition. Slowed means you spend one extra foot of movement for every foot you move using your speed. Attack rolls against you have advantage, and you have disadvantage on dexterity saving throws.
Which is literally what the slow spell does. So now I mean, that's more or less what it does. Now it's just a condition. There's a couple other things that it does a little different, but.
Those are the conditions that they've added in and done. The two other big things to note is inspiration. So they want people gaining inspiration a lot. So whenever you crit, you get inspiration. humans get inspiration right from the get-go.
Musician feat gives you inspiration. Yeah, there's right. tons of ways of getting it now.
So what they want you to do is they want you using inspiration like all the time. They found that people in 5th edition are either like me and never handing out inspiration, or the players are getting inspiration and never using it. So they want to instill people with using inspiration more. I can kind of agree. It's a mechanic that's not getting used to its fullest extent.
Yep.
So tying it into the base rules of spells and other things where you gain inspiration that way, and you're allowed to trade inspiration with other people. Someone, like if you have inspiration and you roll another crit, you can give somebody that crit's inspiration. And that's okay. I'd have to see how that plays out to see if it's too much inspiration. But it's still the same thing. You just get advantage when you use it.
Yeah, the other thing is you lose it. Yeah.
On a long rest. So they really want people to use it quite a bit. Whenever I do, just as a funny side note, when I do Adventures League, I usually eat at the Chinese place that's right next to the store. And I always get fortune cookies. And I don't eat the fortune cookies, so I throw them in the middle of the gaming table, and I call them the fortune cookies of inspiration. And whoever grabs it and eats it during the game gets inspiration.
Nice. They have to eat all of it, though, including the fortune. So.
That was the first person signed. The first time someone actually grabbed the fortune cookie and tried to use it. They go, "Do I have to eat the fortune too?" And I was like, "Of course you do." And they did.
I would have.
And I was like, "You don't have to eat the." I was kidding, man. He's like, "Oh, all right." So the next big kind of notable change in the UA is unarmed strike. So I'll read the whole block here.
I read it and I didn't really see any changes, but go for it.
An unarmed strike is a melee attack that involves you using your body to damage, grapple, or shove a target within your reach. Your bonus to hit with an unarmed strike equals your strength modifier plus your proficiency bonus. On hit, your unarmed strike causes one of the following effects of your choice. Damage. The target takes bludgeoning damage equal to 1 plus your strength modifier. The target is grappled, and the grapple escape DC equals 8 plus your strength modifier plus your proficiency. This grapple is possible only if the target is no more than one size larger than you, and if you have a hand free to grab the target. Shove. You can push the target 5 feet away or knock the target prone. This shove is possible only if the target is no more than one size larger than you. So
they didn't really change it. They just combined all three of them under what they're referring to as unarmed strike.
Correct. So this is going to be feedback that I'm going to give them. Is that I like from 4th edition, charge was something that anyone could do. Grapple and shove is something anyone could do. But people like rarely remembered that they could do those things because it was a separate thing. You know, like I want to grab them or I want to shove them. And when people think of grapple, in this case, it's a one-handed grabbing of somebody versus tackling somebody, which is a whole different thing. Like, I want to jump on them and knock them prone kind of thing.
Mm-hmm.
So lumping these under unarmed strike as, like, separate effects that happen when you grapple somebody, I think it's the wrong direction. I understand that they're trying to make it easier to say, unarmed strike does these three things, and everyone knows this now. No, unarmed strike is you punching somebody. Yes. Shove is a shove, grapple is a grapple, a tackle is a tackle, a charge is a charge. They need to add charge back to...
Well,
they
need to add a few things to this because nobody does grapple. Grapple is fucking garbage. It always has been in 5e. In 3rd edition, you also had pin, and then you could actually do damage. So if you could grapple somebody and then you could win another grapple check against them, not only were they grappled, but they were then pinned to the ground so they couldn't attack. And then you could actually start doing damage to them.
Yeah.
Like, you could actually build a character who was designed to grapple as their primary attack form. And it was reasonably effective against characters who were not, you know, massive sized. Obviously, you're not going to do that shit to a, you know, gargantuan sized dragon, but maybe to an ogre.
Now, going back to feats, the Tavern Brawler feat, which is kind of a new one, gives you enhanced armored strike, which adds bludgeoning damage, 1d4 plus your strength instead of the normal unarmed strike. Yeah.
That's been around for a
while. You can reroll ones with your unarmed strike damage. You can shove, And when you shove, you also deal damage. And then you can also use the furniture as weapons.
Yep. Which has been around. That's been a thing, too.
Yeah, it's been around for a thing. But if they want to start focusing more feats on unarmed strike and lumping those all together, then they need to go the full thing, you know? Just call them, instead of calling unarmed strike, call it unarmed attacks, okay? And then give me the tackle and the charge, you know? And make it really something worthwhile, that this is what you can do when your spells are gone and all you got is a two weapons God gave you. I call it scared. And oh, please, the God, don't hurt me. And the orc calls him beat down.
Yep. Yeah, like that. I really would like for them to add in a little more stuff for the pugilist. We'll just say that.
So that was really the biggest change, and from the glossary. So spells.
Yeah.
The last thing we'll talk about from the UA. Spells have basically been moved from the schools and placed into three separate categories: arcane, divine, and primal. And on the surface, I like it, because that's kind of how I already view spells in my head.
Yeah. That's kind of how everybody does.
Yeah, I don't view a necromantic spell versus an enchantment spell versus a evocation spell. I mean, granted, those were like the subcategories, but it's still, to me, it's arcane, divine, and primal.
Yeah, you have the three categories. You've sort of always had them. They just didn't call them primal spells. That's right. New. The subcategories have always been there. Those need to fucking stay there. That's very important.
So, without seeing the class listings, right now, druids and rangers get primal spells, and they can only pull from primal spells. Clerics and paladins get divine spells, and only they can pull from divine spells.
Except for bards. Bards would probably have access to a little bit of all of this.
No.
Where is she? Does it actually say that?
Yes, it says that. And bards, along with sorcerers, warlocks, and wizards, get access to arcane spells. Now,
I hope if they're taking divine spells away from bards, that they find a way to make them useful. Because bards in 5e are good, specifically because they have access to both.
Now, there's a couple of questions out there. Without seeing the classes, we won't know.
Yeah, we don't know.
Are they getting rid of class spell lists altogether? So is it like, hey, this is an art, you're a bard, wizard, sorcerer, or warlock, you get access to all these spells? Or they're saying, hey, you are a bard, you don't get these spells and the arcane spells, but you get the other ones. I think they're going with is, if you're in this group already, you get access to all these spells. And the thing to note is, in this current list for arcane spells, Eldritch Blast is not a part of the list. Okay, neither is Green Flame Blade or Booming
Blade. There's a lot of them that aren't in this list, though.
But I'm talking about the popular ones.
Yeah, yeah.
So they mentioned that they want to start giving subclasses more oomph and more identity. And they mentioned Eldritch Blasts, where there is going to be a Warlock subclass that focuses on Eldritch Blast, and they get the Eldritch Blast cantrip when they go down that subclass. And so one can only assume from there that Booming Blade and Green Flame Blade may also be the spells that the Hexblade gets. Or like a Bladesinger would get those as well, too. So that may be what they're going to do, is they're going to move away from, you know, you're in these one of these three schools, but these are the extra spells you get for being X thing within the class. So we'll have to definitely see when the spells come out. And I like the secondary, your evocation spells are more powerful. So maybe like an evocation wizard, you know, still knows these evocation spells or get access to evocation spells that other guys can't. That would take fireball away from a lot of wizards. But at the end of the day, not every freaking wizard should be pulling fireball. Or maybe they should. I don't know.
I was a big fan of the, once again, throwing back to the earlier editions with wizards. A lot of them were specialized, and they still have that in fifth edition, but there's not a real big difference between a abjurer wizard and an evoker. There just isn't in 5e. And second, there were massive, massive differences in specialization. In third edition, there were massive differences in being specialized. And they kind of killed that with fifth. So I don't know.
Yeah, I honestly think that I like the idea of specializing the classes. So if they want to make sure that only this one type of warlock guild judge or blast, I love it. Do that, you know?
I don't love that. Obviously, I'd want to see a lot more, but I don't love it because it also takes that spell off the table for everybody else.
I'm fine with that. I'm really not.
I
don't want every freaking caster in 6th edition trying to finagle their feats and their build to some way, shape, and form get Elder's Blast because they heard the meme and everybody wants Elder's Blast. When Firebolt does like the exact same thing.
Yeah, Firebolt is generally going to be perfectly fine. Elder's Blast does force damage. Firebolt does fire damage. It's only good. Like, Elder's Blast is only really good if you're in Warlock anyway, because then you can actually get the things that make it push and pull and range of 300 feet, stuff like that.
Yes, but I am tired of everyone trying to get Elder's Blast in one way, shape, or form. If you want to limit it to a certain build in Warlock, I'm fine for it. Green Flame Blade? It was really cool when you could put Green Flame Blade on the fighter and let the fighter go crazy. But they took that away in Tasha's.
Yeah.
So if that's the route they want to go, if they want to make Blade Singer or Hex Blade and just use Green Flame Blade, I'm fine with that too. If they want to make specialized cantrips, I'm okay with that. And as long as those specialized cantrips lead to specialized spells down the road that resemble a cantrip, like a Green Flame Blade that has a bonus action like Green Flame Explosion Smite later on. Cool. I'm cool with that. Double down on the fact that this cantrip is only for them and really make that subclass drive itself home.
I mean, I said I don't love it, but I also don't hate it because at the same time, that's kind of what they already do. Like, your class, you know, you should have access to certain abilities that nobody else has access to anyway. Okay, so it's a cantrip. Say it's not a cantrip, just make it a goddamn ability, and then I don't care. Yeah. I want spells, the word spells, to be able to be pulled from other people. Especially if it's an arcane, then I should be able to write a scroll for it, or buy a scroll for it, and so forth. But if it's just an ability that a warlock can do, by all means, have at it.
Yeah, and like another thing I get a lot too is like, oh, I'm going to take the mobile feat, and I'm going to take the magic initiate feat, I'm going to get green flame bait, and as a rogue, I'm going to do this. And it's like the same, all the classes are fighting the same way because the min-max TikTok they saw said that this is the way to do 110 damage in level 3. I hate that because you're just making the game boring.
Yep. Yeah, and that is
the highest AC you can have at level 5. First, be a shifter. Then use your tail and get +8 to AC.
Stay the fuck off of TikTok. I'm looking at you, some of my players. Yeah, fortunately, my players don't generally build broke-ass characters because they saw a video on TikTok. But I have a couple of players who live on TikTok. They send me TikTok videos every goddamn day.
I am fine if they want to take spells away from the mass class listings and kind of delve deep into, okay, you're at X. This is a spell that only you get. And use it wisely. Use it for good, use it for evil. We don't care.
I can't argue with it. It's just, you know, once again, that one little word spell is the, that's sort of the trigger for me. I'd much rather just call it an ability. It can literally just be Eldritch Blast. I don't give a shit. Just call it an ability, not a spell, and I'm happy.
Mm-hmm.
All right, well, I think that's everything in the UA, and that's more or less everything they sort of covered that matters.
It's all of our ranting, all of our discussion, all of our things. No quick synopsis. This is close to a 2-hour podcast, guys. So if you stuck through this at the very end, I appreciate you and I love you. Thank you for listening all this way. There's going to be more about this. I mean, like, if you're passionate about D&D, make your thoughts known. Do the playtest. Give the feedback. Think about what you're doing. Understand that you don't have to rant and be completely grumpy ass like we are about these changes. This is only 1% of a whole new edition that they're coming out with.
Yeah. This is the very beginnings of this thing.
Yeah. So don't just don't be scathing like some people are on Twitter right now, calling, you know, Jerry Crawford terrible names because they don't like what he did with Crit. He said, hey, we're throwing this out there. Do you like it or not? Just some, hey, I don't like it. I would like this better. Give them positive, good feedback, because this is still a game that we all enjoy. And we want them to make it better and work better for us as well, too. So don't be negative. Don't be overt. Don't be aggressively negative. Just be, I don't like these things. I like these things.
Yeah, like, and I could always go back to playing third edition. But truthfully, I would rather them just make a sixth edition I like.
And make sure to join the grumpy cause and calling it sixth edition.
Yeah. Or 5-5. I don't give a shit.
No.
I just want everybody needs to unify and call it one or the other.
I don't want to type more numbers. I want to type just 6.
That's a fair point. I like 6 anyway. So.
All right.
I think we're out. Thanks for listening. Bye, Craig.
Bye, Craig. Bye, Craig.